Medical information obtained from our website or the live show is not intended to be a substitute for professional care. If your pet has or you suspect they might have an illness or other medical condition, you should consult a health care provider. The opinions expressed on this radio program are not necessarily those of All Paws Pet Talk, this radio show, or their sponsors.
Listening to Smart Animal Talk on All Paws Pet Talk Radio with me, Deb Wolf. And as usual, I have a ringer of a guest. So if you want to call the show, I will give you the contact numbers first. 1-888-627-6008. That's if you want to ask your question to our guest, who happens to be a veterinarian, willing to take your call today with no charge. So if you've got a stubborn, difficult problem, a problem you've tried various solutions for, or something you just want to know, maybe should you go, shouldn't you go, you want to ask our vet what she thinks, then call us, 1-888-627-6008. I know we're going to be talking about fleas and ticks, and usually that's kind of boring. That's kind of icky and boring, but it's actually pretty controversial. There's some new information out, and I'm going to ask the doctor about that. So, Dr. Karen Gelman, welcome back to the show.
Be here.
It's great to have you. Can you refresh my memory? Where are you calling in from? Where's your clinic?
I live in upstate New York in a town called Ithaca, which is kind of in the middle of nowhere. It's called the Finger Lakes region, and we refer to ourselves as centrally isolated.
Centrally isolated. Oh, that's funny. Okay. That's like when you read a listing for a house and you have to read into it. You know, words like cozy, maybe not the best, but okay, I get it.
In Ithaca, this is where Cornell University is, which is the most famous vet school in the country.
Well, see, now you're bragging. See, you have this conflict, don't you? Your town has these two identities in contrast. So today we're talking about ticks and fleas, and that's usually not very exciting, but there have been new products that have come out. There's new ways to deal with it. There's a more serious risk than ever, more serious reason to deal with it than ever before, but also some controversy about what these products might be doing to us and to the environment. So, Dr. Gelman, thank you for joining us and educating us on our flea and ticks and our problems that go with our pets today. What do you suggest people do?
Well, you know, I think that, you know, that I'm a holistic veterinarian, so I have a little different perspective than some other vets out there. I have concerns about some of the most effective flea and tick products because they present a risk to some pets. Not all pets, because obviously, you know, people wouldn't use them if every pet had problems. But there are pets out there who have sensitivities and who could really be hurt by these problems. So if you have an animal who you know has been sensitive to chemicals in the past, or perhaps even exposed to toxins, then you really want to think twice before using some of these highly effective products like Advantix and the Frontline 3 or 2 or whatever else is out there now, because those products have been associated with certain risky things, especially if you have a small dog or cat. Because I think it has to do with the surface area of the animal. A small dog or cat has less skin to spread out those spot-on products, and those are the ones that have had the most problems.
Even though they're dose-dependent, so you buy a different package altogether if you have a beagle, a different drug and package and everything if you have a cat, it's still harming small dogs and cats disproportionately, you're saying?
That's what it seems to be. Dr. Karen Becker on the Mercola website has actually created a list of some of the incidents with the spot-on products that the EPA has found. So the EPA did a study on this, and they found that the most problems have been seen in small breed dogs and in dogs at their first exposure to the product. So your young dog, you start this product, and you can have some really serious problems, either in the skin, in the gut, or even seizures, nervous system-related stuff. So I had a really unhappy experience last fall where a patient of mine who was hospitalized for renal failure, just before he left the hospital, not my hospital, this was at a different hospital, he had some fleas, and the vet said, oh, let me take care of that. And she just insisted on putting on the flea product, the flea and tick product, and the dog an hour later started having seizures and never recovered.
Oh, that's really sad. But you know what? You get the opposite, too. You get the neglected litter, you know, that you take in at the SPCA or the shelter, places I volunteered or worked at, and it's just the animal's almost dying. This little tiny puppy or kitten is almost dying from flea infestation. And in fact, if yeah. not apprehended, would, right? It would go anemic. So what do you do? Do you spray these sensitive cases? Like, what's the solution for this? Because you can't just let them have fleas.
No. And I am not an expert in shelter medicine. I think that in a situation like that, that you're kind of, you know, looking at what's the greatest good in the situation. You're always going to find a compromise. And in, let's say you do have a litter with a very bad flea infestation, probably you're going to treat that with a flea bath. And you have to be very careful. You have to be sure that you rinse the product out after you take care of the animal. And you look out for some of these signs. And if you see the signs of toxicity, then you need to back off. So, you know, yes, right. You have to make sense of it. But that's a different thing than if you are a pet owner and you know that you have an animal who's reacted in the past to drugs and seems to be sensitive. Then you want to kind of be very careful. And then you say, well, what can I do? I can't just have fleas in the house.
Well, and the thing about the spray versus the 1 month, you know, liquid you put on the back of the neck that's good for 30 days, if your pet's having a problem with it, you can't take it back, right? Whereas with spray, you just don't re-spray in 2 days. You figure out what the,
right.
And that's where I think sometimes with medicine too, sometimes people, I don't know if you found this in your practice, do they ever put a dog on a hormone drug that'll postpone her heat for 6 months, but she doesn't react well to it, and then you got to wait it out, right?
Yeah, that's unfortunate when you have a long-acting medication and you don't know that the animal's going to have a poor reaction to it until after you give it, and that can be a real serious problem.
See, in my use here, because I live in Canada, there's a good part of the winter where there's at least a few freezing days. So our winters aren't too bad for fleas or ticks or any of that stuff. But in the summer, it can get really bad. And for me, I do not want to use collars, flea collars. I don't think they work. Do they work?
Well, there's a new collar out now that a lot of people are saying is both safe and effective. Now, that being said, there are reports that some cats have been problems. Cats have more toxicity sensitivity than dogs do. And again, I think it might be a size thing as well. But this new flea collar is called Serestro. Have you heard of that one?
I don't know. I don't think so. Because I really don't look in that aisle. I'm convinced that the fleas are just going to go to the tail and ignore the head. But that's just, you know, like it's a kind of intuitive thing. When I look at the animal, I look at my big giant standard poodle with his big poofy tail and I think that's not going to protect, but maybe it will.
Well, the Serestro collar is supposedly one that has a much better safety and efficacy record than others. So that's something people can look for. It's Serestro. So if you have a full-size dog, it might be something you want to check out. But I've got
okay. Well, you know what, Dr. Karen, we have to go to break. We're going to come back and talk more about this because we've only covered one suggestion, and I know we're going to have itchy, scratchy pets all over North America and the world over coming up this summer, if not already. If you're living in Florida and you're just shaking your head, give me something. Give me something I can do to get rid of these fleas and ticks so I'm not scratching, my pets aren't scratching, and we don't get something even worse like Lyme disease. So we'll come back and talk about that with Dr. Karen Geller on Smart Animal Talk, All Paws Pet Talk Radio, and with me, Deb Wolf, with my many, many pets who love to swim and play and my flea needs. So you'll be hearing all about what to do for fleas and ticks from Dr. Karen Geller in a minute.
And anytime you're near.
Hey, pet lovers, listen up. Purr Spray Pet, all natural, non-toxic spray for all of your pet problems. Proven safe to use for their skin, eyes, and ears. Helps calm and heal wounds, hot spots, insect bites, and lots more. Will not sting and very safe to use, even for your feathered friends. To find out how you can keep your pets happy and healthy, go to purrspraypet.com. That's purrspraypet.com. purrspraypet.com. Or call us now at 386-310-3924. Hello, you're listening to Smart Animal Talk with me, Deb Wolf. And if you want more of me, then just go to deborahwolfonline.com where you can find all my links and Facebook pictures of my happy camp good dog dogs. Now, we have a pond, so we have dogs who swim here. All the golden retrievers and the labs and the spaniels are pretty much in the pond every day. Would a flea collar still work in that kind of situation, Dr. Karen?
I have no idea. You have to look at the manufacturer's information. It's not something, you know, for my practice, I'm looking at people come to see me because their dogs can't handle the standard flea and tick product. So they say, well, what else can I do? And, you know, I was thinking while we were on break that fleas, they're a nuisance. They certainly are. I mean, fleas love me. If I'm in a house with fleas, they find me first, and then they itch for weeks, and I hate it. But you don't get diseases from fleas. Ticks are the more scary problem in my area, and I think for a lot of parts of the country, because there's just so many diseases that ticks carry. The Lyme disease you mentioned before we went on break is one, but then there's lots of other diseases, too. And one is scarier than the next. And did you see the headlines a few weeks ago that there's a new virus that ticks are carrying in the Northeast? It's called Powassan virus, and it's like life-threatening. It's like Lyme disease to an exponential degree. You get a fever, seizures. You can get very ill and die.
And does it get the pets ill, too, or does the pet just carry it?
It can have the pet ill or the human ill. So it's very, very rare. But it's out there, and it's been recognized now. And the difference between the Powassan and the Lyme is that you start having symptoms within a few hours of getting bit, whereas Lyme disease, I think some of your listeners may know, Lyme disease, it takes 24 hours for the organism to pass into the system, and then often it will take days or weeks for there to be any symptoms from Lyme disease.
It's very hard to identify, though, isn't it? And even if you find the tick on the, I mean, here, I don't know about there, but here, if you find a tick, you're supposed to stick it in a pill container and take it to your vet, and they'll send it away. Nobody will charge you. Everybody wants these things tested. But what do you do if you're camping or you're with your kids and you find a tick on your dog or your kids? I mean, I just heard of a situation. I was camping with the Boy Scouts last weekend. And one of the boys was really scared of the overnight part. And he told us that the week before the Boy Scout trip, he'd gone camping with his parents and got bit by a tick. And, you know, just there's so much. I don't think he ever got sick as a result, but there's just so much anxiety and fear and repeated doctor visits. And it's a big deal, isn't it?
Oh, my goodness. Yeah, one of my son's friends got Lyme disease from the camp they attended together, and he got Bell's palsy and neurologic signs. It was horrible. So, yeah.
Okay, so what do we do about this? I mean, I think the obvious would be touch your pet all the time, brush them after every walk so you actually catch it, right?
Well, so my feeling is that, yes, we can use some products to help keep the ticks off, but there's nothing, absolutely nothing, that takes the place of examining your pet thoroughly. Every day, once a day, once every 24 hours, you have to do a thorough tick check. All the legs, all, you know, under the arms, every possible place. And this, the reason I wanted to give this talk today is because now is the time of year in my area, I'm not sure about yours, where the ticks are reproducing. And the nymph stage, which is the tiniest ticks, which still carry Lyme disease, they're out there, and they are smaller than a poppy seed. So these tiny, tiny things that you wouldn't even see are out there to get you and your pet when you're enjoying the great weather in the wonderful spring.
Oh, you're freaking me out, Dr. Geller.
I know.
I love to be out there, and I don't do all the things I'm supposed to, like long pants tucked into socks and beige clothing and hair in a bun. I don't do any of that stuff. I don't think I've ever been bit by a tick, but I guess, and I am really careful about my pets, but I do clip my pets pretty short, not bald, but real short. Is that a suggestion for people?
Yes. So what we say, if you want to do like a mechanical barrier, that what you want to do is you want to, if you have a dog that has feathers on the legs and the tail, cut them off, because those are like ladders for ticks. So with poodles, it's a different issue. But think about all those bird dogs that have the feathering on the legs and tail. Every single one of them brushes
all the golden retrievers, all the spaniels. Yep. And I know it's real pretty and everything. That's where all her like blonde highlights are. Yeah. Well, that's a tick ladder. Yeah. Forget about it.
It is a tick ladder. So another thing you can do is that you can make the hairs that are left less easy for the tick to climb onto. And one thing that my colleague, Dr. Judith Shoemaker, recommends is that you use shampoos for humans that have a reputation for making the hair nice and shiny, because that shininess is actually making a slick coating on the hair. So I have three suggestions on my website. Anybody who wants to can go to my website to look at these. The URL is IthacaPetWellness.com. And if you go to the front page on the upper right corner, you'll see it says TikTok. And this is a whole page of tick recommendations. So if you wash your dog in Head & Shoulders shampoo once a week, and then use a very fancy detangler cream rinse, like Paul Mitchell or one of those really expensive cream rinses on the dog, that will really coat the hairs and make it hard for the ticks to stick. Now, if any of you...
But you don't worry about them licking it off and getting chemicals in them?
Well, once they dry, there won't be anything to lick off. So you're going to, you know, wash the dog's hair just like you would yourself, where you leave it on for a couple of minutes and then you rinse it off. But it actually, you know, changes the quality of the hair and makes it harder for the ticks to stick on. They'll just, like, fall right off.
Okay, people already think I'm nuts because I brush my dog's teeth. Now they're going to see me conditioning my dog's hair. They're going to think I've lost it.
another thing that you can do is there's a product from the horse show world called Shoshi, and it's essentially hairspray for horses. But you can get some of this stuff, and before you go out to an area that you know is pretty tick infested, you can spray your dog's legs with this stuff. And again, it's making a mechanical barrier in between the dog's leg and the ticks that makes it harder for the ticks to stay on.
Oh, those are such great suggestions. We have a break coming up, so we'll be back to talk more about this. And I want to ask your opinion about a DNA test that's going on over here that I think is a little bit bananas. There's some dog tension in a building near here, and I think it's hitting the worldwide news, but I've been talking about it for a few days. And also, I wanted to recognize, just before we go to break, there was a tremendous dog, a King Shepherd, who, not in his youth at all, an older dog, in a terrible car accident. All the humans except for one young man were hurt and killed in the accident. The young man was tossed from the accident, left in the frigid cold. For 40 hours, this dog stayed by his side. And they're both well and good now. And so his name is Seiki, and he got the Purina Hall of Fame Award this week. So he staved off cougars and bears. So, yeah, I just wanted to say hello and congratulations and well earned. Okay, everybody, so stay tuned to Smart Animal Talk on All Paws Pet Talk Radio. We'll be back to talk about fleas and ticks and a couple other things like the worst building ever. Stay tuned.
I'm your doggy.
I'm your doggy.
And I love you.
Your itchy dog allergy sad? Did you know that our dogs suffer from the same pollen, dust mite, and mold allergies that we do? Now, veterinarian dermatologist Dr. Christian has formulated Doggy Goo. Doggy Goo is a peanut butter treat for your dog. But doggy goo also sublingually builds tolerance to 10 pollens, 2 mites, and 3 molds 100% naturally. Try doggy goo. Your dog will doggy goo. Look it up. Call 855-246-2426. The number again is 855-246-2426. Or on the web, www.healthygoo.com. Goo spelled G-O-O.
Scratch it.
And you're listening to Deb Wolf, and I'm calling in from Vancouver, British Columbia, Canada, where there's been a story that's hit the news worldwide. And it's about probably the worst apartment building ever. I don't know how this got so out of control there, but somebody let their dog take a dump in the lobby. Not once, but twice in the stairwell in the lobby. And so now, apparently the building has cameras and security, but they never work. So rather than fix the cameras and the security, the landlord's agent has decided, the manager of the building, to make everybody in the building with a dog have their dog's poop DNA tested. And if they don't surrender a poop sample for DNA testing, they will be evicted. What do you think about this, Dr. Karen Geller? Would you live there?
What a waste of time and money.
Oh, but you know what? It pisses me off. It really does. When I see people ruining it for the rest of us, you know, letting their dog take a big giant dump on a schoolyard or something. And it's like, come on, help us out a bit.
The problem isn't with the dogs, it's with the owners. I mean, dogs are just doing what they can.
Oh, but this is going to get crazier and crazier. And just a couple of weeks back, they had to change a bylaw to force strata councils to not legislate against sort of all-encompassing anti-dog legislation that was affecting seeing eye dogs and service dogs. So they actually had to legislate to force them to not be against service dogs. And I think part of that problem, I don't know if you're finding this too, but in my world, I'm finding the more uses dogs get, the more their uses go unrecognized or underappreciated. So the blind person walking along with the obvious need of the dog never seems to get questioned. But the person with a hearing impairment that isn't obvious, or, you know, PTSD from serving in the war that looks like he could climb a mountain, that guy, people don't necessarily recognize that this is really a working dog. Are you finding that too?
Well, I don't see a lot of that in my area because I'm not in an urban area with a high population. But it is true that service dogs are helping all kinds of people for all kinds of reasons. So, you know, we need to be a little more tolerant of that.
So we got people a little creeped out in our earlier two segments. We got them worried about fleas. We didn't really tell them what to do about the fleas. We just told them that their dog might be sensitive and maybe they can't use the over-counter the products they wanted. And then we kind of told them the ticks are the real danger. Got them freaked out about that. Okay, so
all right,
now
what
they're,
we do?
Yes, now they're rubbing their dog and they're cuddling their dog. They've given him the haircut. They're using the right shampoos and conditioners to keep the ticks off him. But what if they... Now, I found a tick that was actually a wart once. So what if they find something? Yeah, no, and I tried to remove it. Anyway, what if they find something they think is a tick? How do they know? Is it a tick? And if it is a tick, is it true you can't just pull it out?
Well, ticks are like little insects with, you know, it's like the ball part is when they start eating, then they start filling up with blood, and then they're attached by the head, which kind of bars itself under the skin. There are special instruments that you can get to take ticks out safely, and you can get those like at any camping store. It's like a little tweezer that isolates the head of the tick so that you don't pull off the body and have the head inside. But actually, where I thought you were going with that before you were asking how to get them out was, what are some other options that are safer for helping to keep the fleas and ticks off the animal? And, you know, it's just like with people, there's some dogs that are just tick magnets, and you're not going to be able to find them all. You don't have faith that you could find them all. So I was going to give you a couple of suggestions of other products that might help if you want me to talk about those.
Oh, yeah, for sure. But just before we get off the how to remove it, okay, so I've heard and I've seen people use gasoline and salt, are these no-nos for removing ticks?
Well, they might work. I've not heard of those myself. What you want to do, I mean, I used to hear when I was a kid that you get them off with a burnt match head. So anything that is going to make the tick want to run for its life, those things would probably get the tick to let go and stop biting the animal or the person. You want to be careful with any of those things that, you know, gasoline. I mean, you don't want the dog licking gasoline on the spot. I think that getting if you're like encountering ticks all the time, getting a specialized tick tweezer would be a really great idea. And I said that, you know, pretty much any camping store will have them.
Okay. Okay. So, and what can we do to gently, humanely prevent them from jumping on us and our pets in the first place?
Okay. I've got four different approaches that you can use, and I'm not advocating one over the other, but they're quite different. So there's a new product, new in the last year, called Tick Z, and it's made by the same people who make Pets Life, which is a really great dental product for pets. So Tick Z is an herbal product that you feed a scoop a day to your pet for 5 days every 6 weeks. And it's made with a whole bunch of different herbs, and it actually works to repel the ticks by making the skin have the, the qualities of the herbs. But it's very natural. I've never heard of any pet refusing to eat it, and you only have to do it every 6 weeks. It actually is supposed to work for 7 weeks with ticks, but 6 weeks with fleas. So I tell people do it every 6 weeks so they don't have any fleas or ticks.
So 5 days in a row, every 6 weeks. Is it expensive?
I don't think it's too expensive for what it is. I think in my office it sells for $30 for a tub. And the tub probably lasts one dog for, 10 or 12 treatments. So I think that's pretty cost effective.
Well, I don't know. I mean, the three-dose stuff that goes on the back of the neck, you can probably get for $9.99 most places. So it's $3 a month. But I have had some odd experiences with it. Like recently, I used a batch of it, and it discolored the hair. So my blonde poodles went red, which is okay. Ooh. I don't really care. They're not in a show ring or anything. My red poodle went redder. But you might care if you were in the show ring. You know, this might really... And the quality control, dose to dose, why did that happen all of a sudden when it never happened before with the same product? You know, there's sort of a worry there sometimes.
Yeah. Well,
but
said,
so this stuff is more natural and healthier, and your dog just eats it. And it sounds like it's a little bit more expensive, but not that much more expensive. And it's fleas and ticks, not just the one. So that's good.
Well, right, because you were saying that you spend $9.99 for a once-a-month product. This is $30 for 10 applications, so it's like $30 a year or more. So that's,
I see. Yeah, the $9.99 would be 3 times, so it'd be 3 months.
Yeah.
But still, it's price comparative. Okay, well, that's good to know. Because it's, I have a lot of dogs. I have six dogs.
Right.
It matters to me, and none of them are small. But the other thing you worry about is puppies and kittens, especially when they're really young. A lot of the products say right on them, do not use on puppies, not use on kittens. So you need something. Is this safe for the little ones?
Yes, this is perfectly safe because it's an herbal product. I don't have a bottle in front of me that I can check the label and see if they have a different dose for puppies or kittens, but you could try going on the website and seeing what they say.
You know, recently I was told that the stuff I use on my goats called Panicure, which is a goat dewormer that you only have to do, I think it's twice a year or something. It's really, I thought, oh, great. And it's cheap and everything. Someone said you can use that on dogs too. So I thought, great. But you have to do it 5 times in a row every 2 weeks. There's no way I'm using that on my dogs.
Well,
so you have to read carefully, right?
Panicure is an absolutely fabulous product. It's wormicol fenbendazole, and the fenbendazole is actually a great immune stimulant. So when I have an animal who comes in who's just kind of a wreck and has a million things wrong with them, the first thing I do is put them on Panicure, and this is for horses or dogs. And there's a Panicure C product, which is made for dogs, and you just feed it 3 days in a row, and then you repeat in 2 weeks. So it's not a big deal. and I haven't heard anybody complain about it. But it can be a really great thing to get the immune system going on an animal who's been very debilitated.
Okay, I'm going to ask you that when we come back from the break, because I want to know if the stuff I have for pygmy goats would be okay for dogs and in what dosage as a dewormer. And then I also want to just cover your picks, more of your picks, excuse the pun, for ticks and flea protection when we get back. And we'll talk about some other stuff, maybe some horses, on Smart Animal Talk, All Paws Pet Talk Radio. Stay tuned.
And anytime you're near.
NuVet Plus, your pet's best friend. NuVet Plus is an immune system builder that is safe for all stages of your dog's life. Helps eliminate most issues, including allergies, scratching and itching, hot spots, arthritis and joint issues, chronic ear infections, tear staining, lack of energy, digestive issues, and so much more. All natural, manufactured in an FDA-registered human pharmaceutical lab here in the USA, using ingredients sourced in the USA. Nothing artificial, no sugars, wheat, corn, or dyes. Never heat treated to help retain all the natural rich ingredients. Comes with a 60-day money-back guarantee and is only pennies a day. Call us Monday through Friday, 7 a.m. to 5 p.m. Pacific Time at 1-800-474-7044. That's 1-800-474-7044 and tell them you're referred by All Paws Pet Talk Radio or go online to www.nuvet.com. That's www.nuvet.com. Use order code 33955. Again, www.nuvet.com, order code 3395. Put your pet on the path to good health.
Hello, you're listening to Smart Animal Talk on All Paws Pet Talk Radio with me, Deborah Wolf, and joining me today is Dr. Karen Geller from Ithaca, New York, and we're talking about ticks and fleas and Lyme disease and all these itchy, scratchy problems. So what are your recommendations for people if they know they have a flea problem, they know they have a tick problem? I'm also going to ask you, you know, I've got a standard poodle who's pregnant. She's going to have her puppies the end of May. And I always battle this issue because I don't want the puppies to be afflicted with worms. So I have to get them on some kind of schedule where I'm deworming them every 2 weeks before they go to homes. And but I don't want to do it too young. And I don't want to do her. I just did her about 10 days ago, so she's coming due again. And it's this balance of not wanting to overdo it and not wanting to underdo it. So maybe I'll start with asking you what I can do for her and if Panacure would play a role in that.
Just as an aside, my name is actually Karen Gellman, G-E-L-L-M-A-N. Not Geller, but didn't want anybody to try to find me.
No, I'm so sorry. It's the information I was sent today.
No,
and you know what? I've talked to you before, but it's been over a year. And I kept thinking, this isn't quite right. This isn't quite right.
So about the dogs, this is not an area of expertise of mine, but for any kind of parasite, whether it's an internal parasite like worms or an external parasite like fleas or ticks, the dog's susceptibility has a lot to do with their own nervous system, immune system, but also the environment that they're in. So if you have a great environment where, it's sanitary for the nursing mothers, and they're not getting out into places where they're eating dog's poop that's outside of your own control, the risk of them picking up a worm infection is going to be rather small. That being said, fenbendazole, which is the Panacure product, is a very, 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 very safe product. So I'm not sure what the labeling is on that. While we were on break, I did look up the labeling on the Chick-Z, and that says safe for all ages. I can try to look up the fenbendazole and see if that's safe for puppies.
Yeah, because it does. I've got the goat dosage and the horse dosage and the sheep dosage written on the bottle, but nothing about dogs, cats, or puppies. And I want people to understand, people listening today, that not all medicines can be given to every animal. This is sort of an unusual feature with this one, isn't it?
Right. Fenbendazole is a very safe one. And let's see.
If anyone's curious about Raspberry, the pregnant female standard poodle, or her husband Noodle, they can look, just because I'm stalling now while you look this up, they can look at Camp Good Dog on Facebook and see
puppies
her. And when the puppies are born, we'll be posting pictures of them every week, maybe even every day, because they change so much so fast. But it'll be in the next couple of weeks, so stay tuned for that. Okay, Dr. Galvin.
So in this thing that I just pulled up, fenbendazole is approved for puppies and kittens, and it's approved for pregnant dogs and pregnant cats. So you need all the labeling instructions for those, and it's very, very safe. I mean, I think it's like safe at 20 times the recommended dose. It happens to be a really safe product.
So if it says on the bottle how much in milliliters per pound for a goat, a pygmy goat, which is relatively the exact same size as the dog I'm considering, do I do the same per pound dose for dogs and cats, or no?
I know that in dogs, usually what they have is a powder, not a liquid, and it's 1 gram per 10 pounds of animal. But I don't know what the percentage is there. So I think, again, it's pretty easy to find these information. It's a lot more cost-effective often to use the large animal products for small animals. But if you want to just, you know, make it easy on yourself, you could just get some Panicure C, which is packaged. It's a powder that can be mixed into any wet food. And then you can get that in 1 gram, 2 grams, 3 gram, or 4 gram packages, depending on the size of the dog.
Okay. Well, I already have this premixed liquid, and the vet I got it from doesn't treat dogs and cats at all. So he wouldn't comment at all. He said, go online. So I went online and I got so much conflicting information. Okay. Have you, I guess for you, this isn't a problem, but for a lot of my listeners, you go online looking for veterinary information and you're told left and right at the same time. You just don't know what to believe.
Is your product for goats a 10% oral suspension?
I'm not sure. I can check after.
All right, because the website that I'm on now has recommendations on the dosage for a 10% oral suspension. That's probably what you have.
Okay.
And it's basically how many mils per kilogram of animal. And,
right.
So if you want, I can send you this link.
Oh, that'd be great. Can you do that after the show? Okay, perfect. I know it must be really hard for you. Sometimes when I'm interviewing a veterinarian like yourself, I think how hard it must be to come up with this sort of general broadcasty advice when you really like specifics. Like I know as soon as I give you a specific, you're on it. You're solving that dog, that cat's problem.
Thank goodness for smartphones. That's what I use in the office all the time. What is it? Let's look it up.
Really? Wow.
So the Tick-C product is really safe. Karen Becker, who's the vet for the Mercola website, she's doing wonderful things for veterinarians in North America with great resources. Mercola has created a flea and tick spray that is an essential oil base. So essential oils are wonderful, and they can be really good for treating, you know, getting rid of insects and stuff. You do have to watch out for cats and for the occasional sense of an animal, because essential oils are really powerful stuff. But that's called Dr. Mercola's Flea and Tick Defense. And it has a whole bunch of essential oils in it.
Okay, so there's a couple of myths. We only have 90 seconds left, then we'll come back for the last segment, and I want to talk about horses. But there's a couple of myths. Garlic, onions, Avon Skin So Soft. Are these things that work or don't work for fleas and ticks?
I believe that probably garlic has some efficacy. I wouldn't count on it for ticks because, I mean, ticks, you just have to really be 100% sure. You have to be very careful not to overdose dogs on garlic because garlic is toxic for dogs and large vets. So I knew a story where somebody was feeding a garlic product and then decided to do something else for her fleas and ticks. I didn't realize that they were just doubling up on the garlic, and her dogs had some serious hemolytic anemia. So you do have to be careful. It's not harmless. You can't just keep giving garlic until, you know, the dog smells like a pizzeria.
Okay. So we have to go to break. We'll be back after this, and I think we're going to talk horses, dogs, and cats. What are some of the differences you might see as a veterinarian that people maybe don't know about? Stay tuned. Smart Animal Talk, All Paws Pet Talk Radio.
I'm your doggy.
I'm your doggy.
And I love you.
And I love you.
And you know that.
For your dogs, running beside your bike is more rewarding canine exercise than any walk. It's also more dangerous. Until now. Introducing the amazingly stable Bike Toe Leash, the only safe dog biking attachment approved by the American Pet Association. The Bike Toe Leash installs in seconds on bikes, trikes, power chairs, and mobility scooters. No tools needed, and dogs learn it immediately. With a Bike Toe Leash, both dogs and rider can enjoy fun recreation anywhere, no matter what your ability level. To learn more and order your Bike Toe Leash, visit BikeToeLeash.com. That's BikeToeLeash.com. Bike Toe Leashes are made in the USA and ship worldwide. That website again is BikeToeLeash.com.
Hello, you're listening to Smart Animal Talk on All Paws Pet Talk Radio with me, your host, Deborah Wolf, calling in from Camp Good Dog, where, you know, there are fleas, there are ticks, but not as bad as some places like Florida, where there's never a winter, where a dog just walks around like an entree dinner looking for those insects to find it. So we talked a little bit about all that. And sometimes I've had shows where we talk about the difference between little dogs and big dogs, or cats and dogs, and their perspective. But today I wanted to ask Dr. Galman about horses, dogs, and cats. As a veterinarian, I guess you're not seeing them at their best always. Is there anything you'd like to share with us about horses, dogs, and cats as patients, that how they compare?
Well, they're so different. I mean, probably the thing they have in common is their connection to their people. And even that, it can be really different because, you know, the animals that you live with in your home, you have a very different relationship than the animals that, you know, are living outside. Some people around here have their horses in their backyard. That's pretty common. But, you know, a lot of people have their horses live in a stable far away. They see them maybe once a day, maybe once a week. So the relationships can be different, and also the dynamic is different. I mean, I think,
you know, there's people who show dogs, and I often wonder about this when you see these winners in the ring, you know, getting all their awards and such, and the person who put them through their paces is not their owner, and they lived with that person for the last 6 months, traveled with that person. Don't they miss their dogs? It's a little bit more like the horse that they own from afar, kind of.
Well, I think sometimes the relationship that a show dog owner has with their dog is quite different from a pet owner. And it's more like a business relationship or even a mentorship than, you know, it's like they're their sponsor more than that they're their, you know, their companion. So it's a different thing. And that's not true for everybody, but it might well be true for larger breeders, more successful breeders, because having that distance might even help. You know,
yes.
I forget that was I know we're kind of finished talking about this, but there was one more tick thing that I wanted to tell you about that was so cool. I read about this online where if you live in a yard and there's ticks in your yard, they recommend like taking old toilet paper tubes, filling them with pyrethrum-soaked cotton balls and planting them like every 10 yards. That'll reduce the number of ticks in the area. And it, like, you know, just kind of goes in the underbrush and disappears. So it's a really great thing. And I think, you know, if anybody wants to learn about it, I'll put a link on my website for it.
Wow. That sounds crazy, but sometimes crazy stuff works. Like you put a nail in anything that will rest beside a plum tree and you get better plums. I mean, sometimes crazy stuff works. So you may as well try it. It's a humane solution for a problem that's really difficult and ever increasingly serious. There was this clip on TV that I saw, and it was really interesting because they were chasing this guy who had done some bad things. I can't remember what, but it was a police clip, and the people chasing him were police. And the object of us watching the clip has nothing to do with animals. We were supposed to watch and see how brutal the police were when they caught this guy. But what I saw was a man on a horse, which he had stolen, they alleged, in his escape. He'd been escaping by car and then on foot, and then he'd grabbed somebody's horse and was riding away. The police cornered him. And what I saw, which was surprised me, was even after this stranger was grabbed from the horse and pulled down and first punched by one guy, then two guys, then two more guys, then five guys, the horse stayed with him. And I kind of wondered about that. Like, if the man was brutal, brutal, deep down in his core, would the horse still stay with him? What do you think?
I have no idea. I mean, what are the circumstances? What, you know, when you say the horse stayed with him, I mean, maybe the horse didn't know where he was, had nowhere else to go. I mean, was the horse
probably
protecting him? Was the horse standing
well,
over him?
Well, the horse seemed to be protecting him, seemed to be trying to get between him and the men. And at one point, one of the men clapped really loudly behind the horse, sort of shooing it out of the way. And the horse just kind of slid its rear out of the way, but stayed with its head. It was almost like he was hoping the guy would get back on him. You know, it really, like, it was almost I thought to myself, is that real? Is that an actor horse? Like, what am I watching here, you know? And I just, I don't know. Sometimes, I guess you're right, the horse could have just been afraid.
I just don't know what was going on in the horse's head. Horses are prey animals, so there could have been, you know, something about the situation that made the horse think it was safest to stay where there was a lot of activity and people. I just don't know. I mean, I didn't see the clip and didn't
yes,
know
it was the desert. It was definitely, I could see that the horse would not want to be out there alone and didn't know where it was. Yeah, for sure. And the sirens and the, you know, it was a freaky situation, but you would have thought the horse would run away or run home. But that didn't happen. So I don't know. It was just very interesting. I think
that was strange.
They recently produced a study in Japan that I think they did about 20 years ago, but they've kind of got some more results out about the fact that when you look at your dog or your cat and you have eye contact, your oxytocin level goes up, and so does the animals. And I was wondering, do you think it's true for horses as well?
That's an interesting question. I don't know. This one of the really profound differences between horses and the pets that we live with is this predator-prey thing. So humans and dogs and cats are all predators, whereas a horse is a prey animal. And it is subtle differences in the relationships. So, you know, when we are close with our dogs and cats, it's like this, you know, very direct, you know, kind of maybe even like we're on the same level. Whereas horses, I don't know. I mean, I think a lot of people think their job is to dominate a horse. I happen to disagree with that. But definitely domestic horses depend on us in different ways than dogs and cats depend on us. I would say we depend on the relationship with the person. I mean, a lot of people are very close with their horses, and they probably do experience that. Or maybe they do and the horse doesn't. I don't know.
Well, that was one of the interesting new facts from the study, was that wolves and wolf crosses, while the human still gets the oxytocin, the wolf does not. No matter how tame, no matter how bonded, no matter how trained, it's just not rigged that way, you know? And so I was wondering about that with horses. But you know what? I'm not so sure that cats are strictly predators, because at least where I live, they're often prey. There's a lot of things that eat cats, you know, like coyotes. So are they really strictly still predators in their mindset? Because I think they're hiding a lot, cats.
Well, I mean, it depends if you're talking about, you know, genetically speaking. So in the big scheme of animals, all the feline animals, they're carnivores, therefore they have to kill something to eat. So domestic cats, you know, obviously once we've domesticated animals, we've taken them outside of what their original genetic programming is, and that can be for good or for bad. When you were talking about the difference between wolves' response and dog response, it made me think of some research that's been done where the primary difference between a wild dog and a domesticated dog is that the domestic dog is selected to get along with people. And this guy in Russia did a study when he worked on one of those fox fur farms, and he decided he had, you know, he's in the middle of nowhere and he's got thousands and thousands of foxes. He decided to do a breeding program that was just based on breeding together the foxes that would tolerate him being close to their cage without flipping out. And within two generations, of selecting for that quality only, he started getting changes in not only the foxes' behavior so that they liked being petted and they acted like puppies and they acted like dogs, but actually the way the fox looked changed, that their tails started curling up the way a dog breed does, and their coats started getting spotted the way we see in domestic dogs and we do not see in wild foxes. So many of the things that we associate with domestic animals are totally based on getting along with people.
Well, Dr. Gallen, we've totally run out of time, same as before. Last time I had you on, I said, I'm going to have you right back. And you said yes, and a year went by. So I'm hoping it'll be sooner this time.
Yeah, absolutely. Why don't we should do it every week.
Oh, if only. Yeah. And then we get the questions coming in about the specific itchy, scratchy dogs, the specific can't be solved medical problems. It's so nice to have you. My listeners, thank you for your advice today. Thank you so much, Dr. Gallen.
Yeah, email me for the link. I have it all set up, ready to go. I just don't have your email address.
So, okay, great. Thank you.
Okay.
All right. Panic here for everyone. Okay. Thanks so much.
Nice.
And for everyone listening to Smart Animal Talk, All Paws Pet Talk Radio, we'll be back again next week. Until then, from me, Deborah Wolf, be good to your animals.
And anytime you're near.